All right, everybody, strap on your seatbelt. It is time for yet another Tech Doctor podcast. And I am so very happy that back with me this time is Allison Hartley. How are you doing today, Allison?
Well, actually, I think I'm still on the bus.
Okay.
That's how I feel most days.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, we're on the bus last time.
Yes. Sorry about that, guys.
Glad you're back and hope you're doing well.
I am. Thanks.
Excellent. Well, we've got a very interesting podcast we're going to bring to you today, and I've been really looking forward to this one. We have an app developer with us, and he happens to be all the way from Scotland. He has developed an app that I am really enjoying that is especially good for those of us who love books, because it gives us a way to keep track of when our favorite authors come out with new books, and it's much easier to get the books with this app, and we're going to talk all about it. It also happens to work really well with VoiceOver. This man's name is Ray McCaig, and Ray, welcome to the Tech Doctor podcast. Please take a moment and say hi and tell everybody just a little bit about yourself, if you will.
Hi, Robert. Hi, Allison. Hi, everyone. A developer, as Robert just mentioned, in Aberdeen, Scotland. I've been married to my wife Margaret for about 28 years now. Two sons, 23 and 21. The kind of hobbies that I do are cycling. My wife and I often go for a cycle at weekends, sometimes up to 40, 50 miles. We love hiking, so there are lots of walks and mountainous terrain around about us.
I happen to know that you enjoy playing badminton.
I do. That's what I was just going to say next. I play a lot of badminton. I play about three or four times a week, hopefully fairly competitive. I get a lot of exercise out of badminton. It's brilliant.
How did you get involved developing apps for iOS?
Well, I've been programming for a long time. I've been programming since I was aged around about 12.
Wow.
And started, you know, programming. For those who remember the Sinclair ZX81, the Commodore 64, Tatung Einstein. So that was when I was in kind of boyhood. I did a four-year apprenticeship with BP as a mechanical fitter, but programming and computers was always my thing. So I started professionally in 1988, about 28 years ago, and really only got into iOS development in the last 6 years or so. And so far, I've got four apps on the store, with the latest being Tell Me When, the app we're talking about today. So programming is a real joy for me. What I get out of it is the ability to create and design and build something that I can point at and say, I did that, I built that. And what makes it all the more worthwhile is when you get really good feedback from users who use your app and benefit from it as well. And that really gives me a buzz. And it's those kind of things that make you want to, you know, take an app and develop it further.
So Tell Me When is a really interesting app for those of us who are all into books and finding what our favorite authors are currently writing and when those books are going to be available and so forth. And what I really love about it is you don't have to go digging around on an author's website or a blog to try to find the information. It's available in Tell Me When, and we'll talk a little bit in a moment kind of about how that works, but how'd you get the idea for Tell Me When, or how did it come about? Tell us a little bit about how you got started with it.
Well, another of my hobbies, if you like, that I spend a lot of time with, and that is reading. And one of the problems I had, like you just mentioned there, is if you like a certain author, right, and you're a prolific reader, then you read a book and you say, oh, that was a great author, that was a great series, I want to read the next one when it comes out, and so on and so forth, right? And you move on to your next book, it might be a different author, and you read them and think, oh, brilliant, he's a great author as well. And you move on to your next book and your next, and 6 books ago, the author's forgotten about. You know, you've moved on and you've read a lot of books since then, and you've forgotten about the author you really enjoyed 6 books ago. So that's really where I came from with this, in that I needed something that allowed me to remember, if you like, my favourite authors. So I put the app together for myself initially and found it very useful and decided to launch it out onto the App Store. Because as an iOS developer, I can write all the apps in the world and just have them on my own phone or my own iPad, and no one else gets to see them.
I'm a little envious of that. If I were a developer, I would write all kinds of apps for myself, I think.
That's right. It's very, very useful to have that. So Tell Me When really came about Because there was no easy way to do what I wanted to do without, like you say, visiting websites or following blogs or, you know, trying to assimilate information from a lot of different places.
So essentially, I think you're saying what a lot of developers tell us that really Tell Me When came about because, in a way, you had your own itch that you wanted to scratch.
That's correct, yes. I don't even think I'd called it Tell Me When back then. I can't remember what I initially called it. But it's went onto the App Store and has become relatively popular.
The way that Tell Me When essentially works is you open the app and there's a plus button there that you tap on, and then you can add the name of an author. And then I'm not sure what magic you're doing behind the scenes, but somehow the app goes out and gathers information on that author. And then if you tap on the author's name, once the information is gathered, you actually get a list of books that are available by this author. Essentially, that's how I see it working.
It's less magical than that. Essentially, what happens when you hit the plus button, the app starts talking to the Apple API. Apple provide a search API on their stores. So the iBook store's got a particular set of things you can do with it. You've got iTunes and you've got the video store and the music store and so on and so forth. So there are lots of things I can do beyond simply what I do just now. But I've targeted sort of three main searches that you do. You can type in a name of an author that you're familiar with or want to follow. Let's say you're looking for John Smith, right? What the search engine will do will bring back any authors who has John or Smith in the name, and you get presented with a list of authors that you can then choose from or find the one that you actually want, because you may have multiple John Smiths, so you need to, you know, nail the one that you want to actually follow. And once you've marked that author or identified him, you can add him to your list of authors. And thereafter, what the app does in the background, once a day or thereabouts, it uses the same criteria as you used to search in the first place to go back to the Apple stores and retrieve the list of books for those authors. It then says, okay, I know the published date for each of these books, and it compares that to today's date. And if the published date has just gone past, i.e. the published date went to yesterday, or it then tells you about it. John Smith has published a new book, you know.
So will it actually send you a push notification at that time, or how does it tell you about it?
It's not a push notification. It's all on device. So the app itself has, on your behalf, regardless of whether it's open or closed, will go and query the Apple stores. And if a book matches your criteria, a new book by John Smith has just crossed the deadline of today, then it will raise a local notification and will slide down from the top like any other notification. And also, if you've got an Apple Watch, which I know you both have, then it will also pass that notification onto your watch as well.
Now we're talking. I love getting those notifications on my watch. So that's exciting for me. Allison, yeah. have you tried this app? Tell Me When. Have you had some experience with it?
I have. I use it to monitor a couple of different authors, and actually in the music tab, a couple of different musicians as well. So I absolutely love it.
So that's a piece we haven't even mentioned. We've just talked about books, but there's also a music tab where you can do the same thing, I guess, for looking to see if musicians have something new in the iTunes store. Is that how that works?
It's exactly the same for each of the tabs. You've got authors, you've got, or books, rather, books, music, video. Audiobooks was added in the most recent iteration of the application.
Tell us a little bit, Ray, about audiobooks, because I don't really understand that one, honestly. Because typically, if I'm looking for an audiobook, it would be a book maybe on audible.com that right. probably started out as an ebook or a print book. But it looks like, but at least from what I see in the app, I see something that says audiobook authors. I'm not sure exactly what that means or what that's intended.
Right. What is meant by that is Apple in their iTunes store have a flag that says whether a particular track or I don't know what other word they've used to describe it is an audiobook. So if you've got Clive Cussler as an author who you like to listen to somebody reading his books to you, you know, with all the voices and so on, you can look for Clive Cussler in the same way as you look for a normal author. But in this case, what it will return, instead of returning print books or ebooks rather, it will return books by Clive Cussler that have been converted into audiobooks.
So is it possible then that you might have some of the same authors in both lists, both in the books list and in the audiobooks list?
Yes, absolutely. It is, but you've got to maintain them separately. Now, you are mentioning there Audible. Now, Audible is an Amazon company, and at the moment I'm working with Amazon to implement their search API into the app as well. So if you're a Kindle reader, for instance, what you'll find is that many of the authors that you can find on Amazon are not in the iBooks store.
Exactly.
Publishers don't publish in both places all the time. So, and I certainly find that with some of my favourite writers. So basically, once I've got Amazon integrated, you'll be able to, at the top of the search forms, say you're looking for an author, you'll be able to say, well, I want to look for this author in the Apple iBooks store, or I want to look for Clive Cussler in the Amazon store. And what will happen is the app will remember that you chose Amazon, Clive Cussler from the Amazon store. And when it does its background check to see whether Clive Cussler's released any new books, it will go to the appropriate store of where you chose him from. And this kind of feeds into the audiobook side of things as well, because Amazon will or do provide a way for me to query Audible through the search API as well. So I'll be able to directly query Audible to see whether any new books by Clive Cussler have become available.
That would be really great. And I gather that's going to be something that, as of the time of this recording, which is middle of May, that's going to be something that's coming soon, right? That's not currently in the app.
That's not in the app at the moment. Audiobooks at the moment are only coming from the Apple iTunes store. And the next release of the app will provide access to Amazon.
So then the other piece, just to complete the circle here, once you have found that Clive Cussler book that you are interested in, you can actually tap on the book at that point, and right now it will take you right to the iBook store where you can purchase the book if you want. And I'm assuming it'll be the same for the Amazon store as well when that feature is implemented.
It'll be slightly different with Amazon. Apple provide a built-in way of accessing the stores directly. You know, the stores themselves provide a page that comes up in front of your app.
Yes.
So you don't actually leave the app to go and purchase the book.
Yes.
Now, with Amazon, it's a bit different because you don't have the same facilities available, or I don't have the same facilities available
right
to me. So what will happen initially, I think, at the moment, I'm still planning this, still designing this part of it, is that when you tap on a book who is an Amazon author, it will probably leave the app and go to Safari and drop you into either the browser, the Safari browser, looking at that book inside Amazon, or it will pop up the Amazon app, you know, the actual store app that they've got.
Yes, yes. What I normally do is go to the mobile Amazon Kindle site when I'm looking for a book like that. I guess you can do it through the Amazon app. I've never done it that way.
Yeah, that's right. It'll be something along the same lines probably, but it will leave Tell Me When to go there, which is a bit unfortunate. I would prefer to keep users inside my app. But for this initial release, I think I need to play it softly with Apple.
I don't think you have any choice, really, because Apple won't allow you to do it from with inside the app.
What I want to do is achieve the process of you being able to choose a book, and actually go and follow the link to the book in the Amazon store. Wherever you end up, you'll be looking at the book. So that's the service I want to provide users. You know, it's not about making money or anything like that for me. It's about providing a service to you as a reader so that you can get the best from the app. And if it may be in future iterations of the application, the actual method of getting to the Amazon store might change as I get better at it, as I understand it better.
Right.
But at the moment, the first version of this is probably going to leave the app in some format.
And so when it leaves the app, because of the way iOS works, I guess it will have left the app and you'll have to reopen the app through the app switcher or some other way if you want to come back to it.
That's correct, yes.
Yeah, that's one of the downsides of it, I guess. It makes it a little less seamless if you have to do it that way.
It's a little bit more clunky as a word I would use for that. But at the moment, I don't have much choice, you know.
Yeah.
So, but I still want to be able to send readers to a book that they want to look at.
Right, because it still makes it really nice, because ultimately you're going to wind up right on the page where the book is, and you can buy the book right from there.
That's correct. I mean, ultimately, it's about putting you as the reader in touch with a book that you might want to read. And how that happens, that's the reason for this app. It, you know, it's all about making things easier for you as a reader to keep track of these books, to find them easily, to be able to look at an author's back catalogue and see what books you might not have read yet. You know, things like that, all available to you.
Well, one of the things that has been, I think, honestly, the most exciting for me, and I bet you would agree, Allison, about this whole coming along of iOS the way that it has, is literally the millions of books that we've gotten access to. And Tell Me When, to me, just really takes that a step further, because it makes it so much easier to take the idea of checking to see what the author has available, purchasing that, and immediately start reading it, and very soon either reading it, say, in the Kindle app or in the Audible app or whatever, wherever the book comes from, you're going to be able to do that very easily. And so, I mean, I just can't tell you how exciting that is for me.
I'm very pleased to hear how useful it is for you, Robert. Very, very good.
One of the things I wanted to ask you about is, because it's so interesting to me, when we were talking, you were telling me that you have written this entire app in Swift. So you've really embraced the new Apple programming language. And can you say just a little bit about that experience, what that's been like for you?
I've tried a number of different methods of developing apps for the iPhone and iPad. My first app was written in Objective-C, which was an absolute nightmare, because I came from a .NET, C# kind of environment. You know, it was Java-like, and it was a nice structure to the language and very friendly. You cannot say any of that about Objective-C. Objective-C is an alien language. But I persevered and I learned Objective-C to develop my lending app. The next app I put together was a Photos app, right? And it was all written in JavaScript using an AppCelerator's product, Titanium. And basically what the exciting thing about that product is that you write your app in JavaScript, a familiar language to a lot of developers, and it's also a cross-platform, so you could write it once and have it work in Android or in iPhone, iOS, or even Microsoft now, I think they support. So when Swift came along, I leapt on it and grabbed it with both hands and learned it and did a couple of training courses. But you can do all the training courses in the world. If you're not actually using it to build something useful, then the new knowledge you've learned disappears quite quick. So I decided to actually write Tell Me When, or whatever it was called at the very beginning, in Swift. Use that as my platform for launching my experience, if you like, in Swift. And it's been a very pleasurable experience, let me say. It has a lot of similarities to languages like C# or Swift, not Swift, JavaScript. A lot of similarities, but also a lot of really exciting language features that make programming easier.
It sounds like you like it better than Objective-C.
Yes, I do.
So I think one of Apple's goals, I understand it, was to try to come up with a language that would serve app developers' needs better, and at least for you, it sounds like they've accomplished that at least to some degree.
They have indeed, although it's still in sort of semi-beta status, in that the language is still developing and changing, and from one release to the next, you don't actually know whether it's going to break your existing app or not. And unfortunately, in the previous iteration, it had broken something, and I hadn't realized. It was to do with the music tab and the video tab. When you tapped on one of your favorite actors or favorite artists, the app immediately crashed. And I hadn't realized this, and panic stations.
That's how I actually first got in touch with you, was discovering those problems with the app. And it turned out that Apple had changed some things within Swift, and you had to do a quick update, which you did very quickly, and now the app works just fine. But I guess that's part of cutting your teeth on a new language.
It is changing from release to release. There are new features added, features get deprecated, and undoubtedly there will be something that will happen that will cause parts of your application to no longer behave like it did before. And you have to be very careful. Test. Mm-hmm. That's the key word, really, is testing.
I'm assuming that will gradually begin to settle down over time.
I imagine so.
The other thing I wanted to mention, because I was really kind of surprised when we discussed this briefly the other day, was that you said that it's completely, really by accident, that the app works very, very well with VoiceOver.
That's correct.
You had no idea about that.
I hadn't even heard of VoiceOver before until a couple of months ago, when I discovered that some of the other podcasts had did a piece on me, or on Tell Me When.
Yes, that was the Apple Viz podcast. I'll put a link to that podcast in the show notes, because that'll be a really good place for people to go back and hear the application demonstrated and see exactly how it does work with VoiceOver. It's really incredible that it works very well straight out of the box with VoiceOver without you having to, it sounds like, do any special adaptation at all. And that's a bit surprising to me, honestly.
I think the contributing factor there, Robert, is that I'm not using any fancy graphics, you know, to replace text. It's mostly standard controls that I'm using and standard labels. So VoiceOver or technologies like it are able to see the text in order to read it back to you. Whereas if that text was part of an image, then it has no chance. So it is purely by accident that it works so well with VoiceOver. Not an intention of mine. I wish I could say it was, but it really is by accident.
Very happy accident.
Yes. Do you find it works well for you also, Allison, with VoiceOver?
Oh, yes. I've never had any problems with it.
Yeah, it is great when a happy accident like that can happen. And so I would just encourage everyone who is interested at all in reading and tracking authors and tracking musicians and soon, I guess, tracking Amazon Kindle books, as well as, fortunately, Audible books, mm-hmm. since they're owned by Amazon, to go out and give this app a try. And another happy, I guess it's not an accident, but another happy situation here is this app is free in the App Store.
It is absolutely free. Basically, what I wanted to achieve here is to remove any barrier to entry, I think is a term you might use for this, where people might say, oh, Apple is good, but you know, it costs 99 cents or it costs $1.99 or whatever the cost might have been. And that might be for some a barrier to entry. And I decided to remove that and not charge for the app at all. And I'm quite happy at that fact. I mean, so far the app's had around about 600-700 downloads. I'd like a lot more. I'd like lots of people to be using it all the time. But the fact that 600 or 700 people have downloaded this app to serve a very particular purpose accomplishes, you know, what I wanted to get out of the app in the first place. And if all those people are finding the app useful, then I've succeeded.
That's wonderful.
I honestly worry sometimes about what's going to happen, you know, because the App Store has gotten so huge. Everyone has gotten the mindset that an app shouldn't cost more than a dollar or two, or in fact should be free.
Yes.
How can this model be sustainable? How can people continue to develop apps and, you know, make a living at this if it goes on like this?
Well, the only other avenue for developers to take is an ads-based approach to things. You know, so the app goes free and then you show ads, which could provide some income. I've decided not to do ads in this either, because I find ads very irritating myself, and I don't want to put that burden on my users. Just to go back to a previous point there, Robert, the other barrier to entry to this app at the moment is the fact that it doesn't currently support Amazon. And what I'm finding is that there are a lot of people visiting the App Store page to look at the app, but I'm only getting about a third of them actually downloading the app. So I suspect the other two-thirds are probably Amazon or Kindle readers. And when they notice that it doesn't support Amazon, they're saying, well, that's not any good for me. So once I add Amazon into the fold, hopefully that will encourage people to download it or at least give it a try. You know, and that's the other good advantage of free, is that, you know, there's no impulse purchase, there's no thinking required. It's a free app that they can download, try it. If it doesn't suit their purpose, they can forget about it. But if it does actually happen to suit their purpose, then we're all winners.
Yeah, it sounds like adding Amazon into the mix is going to be really necessary, because I know those Kindle books, the Kindle app is just hugely popular. And of course,
it is.
They have the widest selection of books, by far more books than are in the iBook store. And so I can see how that would be very necessary.
It's a massive difference in market share. Apple have something like somewhere between 10 and 15%. Whereas Amazon are something like 85% of the ebook industry. And that's quite significant.
One of the things that I'm most happy about is your enthusiasm for this app. When it broke there for a little while, I was worried, oh my gosh, am I gonna lose my tell me when here? But I see I see that you have some real enthusiasm for it and plan on continuing developing it. So I think it's something that people can likely count on using and enjoying and count on it being around for a while. And so I'm really glad about that.
Yes, I'm not going to abandon people yet. Never. Sorry, I should have said never there, shouldn't I?
Yeah, that's right.
I'm never going to abandon people. No, the app will always be available because I use it myself.
Listening to you talk briefly about your other apps, I'm assuming that the other apps are... sounds like they're more graphically oriented. Maybe they probably wouldn't be necessarily appropriate for voiceover users.
The other ones are maybe a little bit more graphically oriented. I have an exercise app called Intervallis, which if you do interval training, then this puts up timers and tells you when to rest and tells you when to exercise. And, you know, interval training is about sharp bursts of exercise, you know, take a minute to do press-ups or burpees or something like that, and then take a 30-second rest and do another set of a minute. That's what the app's all about, is keeping track of where you are in your seven-set exercise.
Do you know whether or not that one works with VoiceOver?
I don't know, yeah. Sorry. Like I mentioned earlier, I had no idea VoiceOver even existed up until recently. The other apps that I have, Photo Organizer, basically it's been kind of superseded now by a lot of the functionality that have come out from Apple about tagging photos and organizing them and so on. So it's possibly less useful. The premise of the app is that it allows you to load photos into it and then organize them, put them into folders, tag it so you can do a search, for instance, in the app and say, well, what photos contain both myself and my dog? That's probably my next most popular app, actually. It's had about 350 downloads, and it's a paid app. The other app that I have in the store, the very first one, it's an app that allows you to lend things to your friends and get the app to remember it so you don't have to. And that's the kind of premise of the app, is that if you record the fact that you've, you know, lent your favorite DVD to Joe Bloggs, then the app will tell you, and whenever you tell it, you want to be told when the DVD is to be returned, then it will pop up a local notification and say, right, okay, you need to go and get your DVD back from whoever you lent it to. And if you borrow something from someone else, it records that fact as well and reminds you to give it back. So it's a very simple sort of lending type app. These are the apps I've got in the store, but Tell Me When by far has had the most response and the most feedback. And across the various stores, there's been four five-star reviews so far. Somebody gave it a one-star at the very beginning because it didn't do something they wanted it to do. But generally, it's been a pretty good response to the app.
I always hear developers say that those iTunes reviews are really important for the app. I assume they do a lot to, in some way or another, to promote the app or move the app to the top of the store or something. Is that how that works?
When you look for a particular keyword, when you search the App Store, Apple use reviews and the stars to gauge where they think your app should fit in the list of apps that come back as a result of your search. So the more reviews that you get, the more chance you have of being higher on the list. It's always an advantage if you can get your users to leave reviews. And I would encourage anyone who's listening to this podcast, if they could leave a review, it really helps me a lot. It also gives me encouragement as well, you know, because it lets me see that I'm doing something right. I'm producing an app that's useful for people. So it's nice to get feedback, nice to get emails from users. I've had a lot of really good emails. It gives me a lot of pleasure to read these emails and see what people expect from the app. Some of the ideas, like the audiobooks, has come from email.
Yeah.
From users. I have another feature that's coming out shortly, which you might find interesting, in that you may already have a selection of books in your local library, and you've read them. So you'll be able to mark those books. We'll use Clive Cussler again as an example. You'll be able to mark some of Clive Cussler's books and say, I already have these or I've read them. So you can mark them as not to be shown when you look at Clive Cussler books.
Oh, nice.
And it'll maintain a separate list. So you'll be able to see what books you have, but also to be able to hide the ones that you do have so they don't get in the way of all the ones you don't have.
So, Allison, I'm thinking that this is going to likely increase your reading habit even more.
If it can possibly be increased more, yeah, especially with the addition of the Amazon component, that's going to be even better. I already love this app, and I'm just going to continue to love it more and more as that gets added as well.
That's encouraging.
It's a lot of fun to hear about how it's kind of evolving and developing, and I really appreciate you, Ray, taking some of your time to come on the podcast here and talk with us about it. Is there any contact information or anything that you would like our listeners to be sure and know about you as we bring this to an end?
My name is Ray McCaig on Twitter. My own website is raymccaig.com. People can go to there and see all my apps. It's really just a landing page that has each of my apps. It's not a selling page or anything. It just gives a bit more information about these apps.
Did you want people to have an email address?
Well, the email address I would prefer them to use would be support@raymccaig.com.
Perfect. Thank you very much for taking a little time to talk with us today.
It's been my pleasure, Robert and Allison. It's been very good to meet you.
Thank you.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening this time. We hope you will keep in touch with us. And Allison, if people do want to email us, how in the world would they go about doing that?
Well, it's a quite simple process. They would just send an email to techdoctor@dr-carter.com. That's techdoctor@dr-carter.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Excellent. And until next time, this is Robert the Tech Doctor saying so long for now.
And this is Allison Hartley saying bye, everyone.